Welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, John Spencer. I'm a former middle school teacher, current college professor. I'm also an author, a dad, a maker, a speaker, all kinds of fun stuff like that. And in this podcast, we explore the intersection between creativity and student learning. And so I want to talk about the starting point for creativity today. Where does great design begin? I'm going to start with a story. For the last 5 days, our yard has been canvassed by a thick sheet of snow. Well, thick for a southwestern guy who's just moved from Phoenix to just outside of Portland up in the northwest. But I'm pretty sure my friends up in Michigan would call it a dusting. But to me, if it's several inches thick, it's not a dusting. If you can make snow monsters and snowmen and all kinds of stuff like that, then it simply doesn't count. But my kids have been throwing snowballs and making snow monsters. They've been sledding down the yard. They've just been playing like crazy in the snow. And on Sunday, my oldest son asked to do an experiment. "Dad, I want to know what chemicals will melt the snow the fastest," he pointed out. "Well, what do you think is going to win?" I asked him. He paused for a second. "I'm thinking of testing it out with salt, rubbing alcohol, vinegar, sand. What else could I use?" I tossed out a few random things that I knew probably wouldn't work well, like shampoo. And then we got all our materials together, and it led to a series of experiments where we tested the various liquids and chemicals on snowballs and sheets of ice. The winning chemical, turns out it's rubbing alcohol. And that doesn't surprise me entirely. It has a really low freezing point, but it was still a fun experiment to do with my son. And it was fun largely because it started with him and his own creative mind. And I should say, actually not creative at the time, more his own curious mind. This sense of wonder and curiosity led to something deeper, though, and that was creativity. Although as we walked back into the house, my son had an idea. "Dad, what if we tried to melt the snow on the driveway with rubbing alcohol instead of shoveling it?" Now, his idea isn't entirely practical. It would take a lot of rubbing alcohol to fix the driveway. But it was a reminder of something that I've noticed, which is that curiosity often leads to creativity. You start with a sense of wonder, and then after playing around with ideas and systems, you ultimately decide to create something entirely new. And it's this ongoing curiosity-creativity cycle that often leads to innovation. And I mention this because I often hear bold statements about how design thinking must begin with empathy. And it's true that empathy is a powerful starting point for design thinking. It's no wonder that the Stanford D School began their original model with empathize as their first stage and ultimately testing as the end. But as AJ Giuliani and I were working on the Launch Cycle, it's a K-12 student-centered design thinking model, we both shared a similar observation from our own classroom experiences. And it was this: the creative spark doesn't always start with empathy. Sometimes it starts with something different. And so we asked, you know, what is that common initial starting point? What do all those starting points share? And it was ultimately awareness. We began with this idea that awareness is often the starting point for design, and we've labeled awareness as look, listen, and learn in our model. And sometimes the awareness involves empathy, but sometimes it's a problem or a process that sparks the design process. Sometimes it's a great idea that only later do they actually think about their audience. But the beginning part always starts with this sense of awareness, this sense of a creative spark of some sort. And this might involve tapping into prior knowledge, but it might also involve providing a new question, a scenario, a story, or a phenomenon that pushes students to question their prior knowledge and ultimately make something new. The process of establishing awareness will vary from project to project and from subject to subject. It will look different depending on what you teach and the mix of students that comprise your class, their age, the final product that they're ultimately going to create. All of those things change this starting point. But it always begins with a sense of awareness. I think it's important to realize that you can't make someone aware. Instead, awareness is something you inspire. Awareness isn't something you create in another person. It's something that they tap into. But you can construct scenarios that expand your students' awareness and increase their curiosity. So here are 6 ways that you can tap into this sense of awareness. In other words, these are the starting points for design thinking. Number 1, start with an observation of a natural phenomenon. Observation is a natural tool for math and science. Students see a specific phenomenon and they start growing in their awareness. It might involve, you know, looking at magnets or plants. And whether they realize it or not, they will compare what they are observing with past observations. They might even tap into former observations they had in those really cool labs they did in previously in your class, right? So this sense of prior knowledge could come from things that they've already done before, and that's not a bad thing. Sometimes what they see will confirm what they already know. And that's okay. Other times, though, they'll have new insights that will challenge their preconceived notions of how the world works. Either way, this awareness will fuel their curiosity and ultimately their creativity. So, back to my son, this awareness began by observing snow through hours and hours and hours and hours of play. It never felt academic, and in fact, it never really felt creative until eventually it did. Number 2, start with awareness about a specific issue. Design thinking is often associated with STEM or with the business world, but sometimes the awareness can lead to services rather than tangible goods. And sometimes it starts with something very social. It starts with a sense of justice about how the world works. When students see something that breaks their hearts, their social awareness often leads to empathy, exploration, and potentially the development of a solution that is truly human-centered. Students don't have to have a solution in their mind at the beginning. They don't even have to have a deep sense of empathy with those who are affected by the issue. In most cases, they will develop both the conceptual understanding and the contextual empathy towards those they will serve when they engage in the research phase. But in this initial part, all they know is that there's something in this world that is broken, and it really bothers them. And it's just not right. And they want to fix it. Number 3, start with empathy. And this is what we've already mentioned. This is different than the previous approach because here you really do have an empathy toward a group. It tends to work best when students identify with a group on a personal level. For example, rather than simply caring about poverty, students are able to empathize with the poor because they've either experienced it themselves, which was true of the school that I taught in, or they've felt, you know, what it is to be hungry or to not have a place to call home, and they get it. Or they know people who have been affected by it. And so either of those ultimately lead toward a deeper sense of awareness. And personal experience connects them on a heart level to the issues that those living in poverty face. And over time, their experiences and empathy enable them to develop solutions that can actually empower rather than simply benefit the poor. And it's because they know it. Soon, some of the best social solutions begin with this deep, humble respect for what a specific population is experiencing. I noticed this when I worked, like I said, in an urban low-income school. My students knew about poverty because they had seen the way it impacted people they cared about. Though many of my students wouldn't have called themselves poor, in their minds, poverty literally meant that they were homeless. They knew what it felt like to be poor. They had experienced hunger themselves. They saw how economic needs impacted their community. So when we created a service project, they were able to design specific solutions that honored the dignity of those around them. And that was the power of empathy. Number four, you can start with a specific problem that needs to be solved. Though the previous two approaches allow for students to address social needs, that's not always the case. Sometimes it's simply a problem that needs to be fixed. In this approach of focusing on the problem first, you can often create a product that really solves something that is truly, genuinely practical. For example, when we did our Shark Tank style project, students began with a specific consumer problem. And so they started with this question of what is an annoying problem people are facing right now? Unlike the previous approach, we started with this problem rather than with the group. Students aren't conducting interviews with future consumers. They're not doing needs assessments, none of that right now. They're just thinking about the specific problem. And then later, they'll gain empathy and think about how that problem affects actual people. They're not trying to figure out who will use what they create. All they're thinking about is what the specific problem is and why that matters. And often this is the case with certain engineering problems. And that's a great starting place, like I said, in a lot of engineering or even math problems that we've done that used design thinking. Number five, start with a product idea. Sometimes awareness begins with a product idea. You might set out a specific challenge for your class that they're going to write a novel, create a blog, film a documentary. And this is the idea behind things like the National Novel Writing Month. I have a hard time saying that, but NaNoWriMo, right? Students have a clear picture of the finished product in mind, and then they think about the idea, the audience, and then they think about research and all that other stuff. But they're really beginning with this notion of I'm going to make a blank, and that's okay. There's nothing wrong with starting with I want to make a novel. I want to make a video. There's a lot of people in design thinking that kind of bash that, but sometimes it's a really exciting thing for kids who have never made those types of things before. In this very first stage, they aren't thinking about the problem, the audience, the process, none of that. They're simply psyched out about making something cool. A word of caution here. If you start out with a general product in mind, please keep it general. When students zero in on a specific idea without going through what will eventually be inquiry, research, and ideation, they end up short-circuiting this process and miss out on the chance to create something different. So starting off general is a great way to go when it comes to this. Number six, start with a geeky interest. Design doesn't have to begin with a bold idea or empathy toward an audience or a clear understanding of the problem. It can simply start out with a geeky interest. With initiatives like 20% Time and Genius Hour, students have the freedom to tap into their passions and interests and eventually apply their knowledge to a larger product. The benefit of this approach is that it supports intrinsic motivation through student choice. Moreover, it allows students to feel understood and affirmed while they tap into their prior knowledge. So if you have a student who is into crocheting or unicorns or ninjas or crocheting a unicorn that's being ridden by a ninja, whatever they're into, let them begin with that sense of passion, with that sense of interest, with basically the stuff that they love and geek out about. Creative projects are inherently challenging. However, when students can begin with their own geeky interest, they actually persevere better. And I've noticed that ultimately, this is just one of many different starting places for creativity. And that as long as we are open to the fact that creativity can really start from anywhere, and we're creating that sense of wonder and curiosity and awareness in our students, then ultimately, great design is going to be a byproduct of that. Hey, thank you for listening to the Creative Classroom Podcast. The music is from Bensound. It's at bensound.com. And if you enjoy this podcast at all, please leave a review. I think I have like one or two reviews on there on iTunes for whatever. All seven of you who are listening or however many it is. Thanks for listening. I really do appreciate it. And let me know what you think of this podcast.